ChatGPT. It's a form of generative artificial intelligence. Developed by OpenAI, it was launched into the marketplace in November of 2022. In its first 5 days, it attracted 1 million users. In just over a year, it's become one of the most popular applications in the history of the internet. Maybe you're one of the users. But that doesn't mean that ChatGPT or other generative AI always live up to expectations. In fact, they often seem incapable of producing exactly what users want to produce in text or code or image generation. That's according to Francisco Castro. He is an assistant professor of the UCLA Anderson School of Management. He and a team of researchers say that when you give a chatbot an assignment, here's their quote, it spits out an answer that's based on what it's learned from data sets and the internet, and it may be technically right. But that is not enough, they say. And there can be societal consequences. Hello again, I'm Armin Alney, and this is How the World Works, a podcast from UCLA Anderson. Professor Francisco Castro, welcome to our program.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Good to have you. So you say that ChatGPT, quote, beginning to fill the internet with content that's bland and generic. What do you mean by that?
The way we interact with this technology that was trained from this content from the internet, right? We enter a query, we write what we want to do, whatever the task that we have at hand. And then sometimes, if we are in a hurry, we just take the first answer that we get. That answer then goes maybe back to the internet. And so all of this generated content from the AI is going back to the internet. But if we are not putting enough effort to generate with the AI, we're going to end up with very generic content generated by this technology. And all of this is spreading through the internet.
So you say that this means that AI systems are inherently biased. Elaborate a bit, if you will, on that idea.
Yeah, so there is 3 main stages. The first one is a pre-training stage, right? Typically, it takes a bunch of text or audio content generated by people before. You can train a model with this data, and then you can use it, right? So you can ask a question, but maybe the model is going to output a question. So that's not very useful. So that's why there is a second stage. And in this second stage, which is the fine-tuning, you essentially label things. So you have a question and an answer. And so you create these associations and you end up with an assistant. And that's a lot more useful, right? You ask a question, any question, and you will get an answer. And then the third stage is reinforcement learning with human feedback, in which you have the AI generating content and you have humans comparing the content generated by the AI and deciding what's best. Throughout this process I described, there is humans involved. Right? And there is content generated by humans. And as you may imagine, humans are biased. They have certain opinions. Maybe they are right-leaning or left-leaning, and that can become part of the AI.
So that's fine if there's 3 stages, but people don't always go to the second or third stage.
If we only stay with the first stage, with the pre-training, which only uses the content generated from the internet, for example, then we don't have an AI that's going to be very useful. It's just going to try to predict what's the next logical word in the sequence of words that you input it in the AI, right? But maybe it's not going to understand the content that you wrote. That's why you need to do the fine tuning where you label things. So if you input a question, then the AI can generate an answer, right? So you have pairs, for example, of questions and answers, and you label them. And then the AI learns to recognize that pattern and is able to output answers to your questions. It's in that labeling where we can start seeing some biases, because there are people that label these things. And if you have people that have certain tendencies, right, or certain opinions, that's going to be captured by the AI. And then when we interact with normal people interact with the AI and they are searching for answers or searching for solutions to their problems, these biases may start emerging.
So on the one hand, they may be too lazy to do the work, but on the other hand, if they do it, they may put bias into the system.
Yeah, so let's say you want to write a news article, right? You have a certain topic and you would like ChatGPT to tell you a little bit about that topic. And so you input some information to ChatGPT, you have this trade-off, right? So if you're in a hurry, you may not give a very specific query to ChatGPT. And so you're going to get, as a result, a very generic answer that sort of mimics what most of the population would have written. But then you would like to have something that's maybe better, not as generic, because you have very specific preferences, very personal styles of writing and things like that. But that requires effort, right? So you have this trade-off between getting something that is really close to what you'd have done without the AI and the time it takes to do that. It could take you a day, 3 days to write a great piece of a great article. And so there is a clear trade-off between fidelity versus communication cost.
So what are the societal consequences, to use your phrase?
There are two potential societal consequences. One, which is related to your previous question, is the bias, right? So if I don't put a lot of work, a lot of effort when I write a query to ChatGPT, I'm going to obtain a generic answer. And if it happens that the AI is biased towards certain, for example, political side, then I'm going to get an answer that is generic and biased towards that political side. So I really need to work really, really hard to try to avoid that bias. That's one potential consequence, is that the content that we start generating may be biased if the AI was trained with biased content. So the bias that a few people have may translate into a more broader bias that spreads across society, right? As we generate content and we put this content on the internet.
The bias spreads because everybody's using the same information.
Exactly. The other potential consequence is something that we call homogenization. Homogenization essentially is this idea that things tend to become the same. And the way this happens is that essentially you train an AI, right? So you have the first version of ChatGPT. It's costly to provide very specific information about what you want to do, right? So you may start accepting some generic answers that translates into generic content that's generated by the AI. And then if we use that content to train the next generation of AIs, we end up with an AI that creates even more generic content. And so if we iterate this process, we can end up with something that is more homogenized, something that generates answers that are even more generic than the first generation of AIs.
So there's bias on the one hand and homogenization on the other. What do you mean by the death spiral? That sounds like a warning to people, but it's a stronger term than you've used so far. Why do you call it that?
Yeah, so it's related to this idea of homogeneity or homogenization. The message that we're trying to transmit here is that we should be aware that people are interacting with this technology. So it's a very exciting technology. It has potential for a lot of benefits. It could really enhance productivity for companies and for people, right? But the thing is that being very specific for precise prompts takes time and effort. This could lead to this problem of homogenization. It's really more of a warning to be aware of this problem, that if we interact multiple times with the AI and they keep training the AI with the content that we start generating using the AI, and then we do this again and again, then we may end up in a world where the content that we generate has less nuance.
So the problems are bias and homogenization or homogeneity. And the way to overcome them is for people to be more careful in the way that they refine their prompts and questions. But that can be costly in terms of time, and that causes a problem with what you refer to as productivity.
Yes, it's a great point. And I think in a way, these companies are aware of this because they're coming up with newer ways for people to interact with the AI. They realize that when you input something, they realize that people not always get something that they really like. It's technically correct, but it's not quite there. It's missing something. And so what these companies are doing now is developing something that is called multimodality. Now you are not only inputting a query or a prompt by writing, but now you can input an image. You can draw something on a piece of paper, take a picture, put it in the AI, and the AI will do something with it. Google did this sort of like a presentation where they presented this new AI they call Gemini. And this is a multimodal AI. You can input audio, video, text, images, and the AI is able to recognize this and give you answers with this, right? So what this means for this problem of homogenization or getting generic answers is that really now you can convey a lot more than you were able to convey before. So for example, if I write something, it might be missing the tone. You know, when you talk, your tone conveys more about the idea than just the words we convey by their own. So the AI now can listen. It's getting the words, but also it's getting the tone. This could really help reduce this problem of homogenization.
So Google's Gemini then is less likely to cause the kind of societal issues that you are concerned about?
Yeah, exactly. Because in a way, they are reducing the cost of communication, right? So this multimodal system is making it a lot easier for me to express myself, my personal preferences, my personal style. And by doing that, it reduces effectively the cost of communication. And now I can get less generic answer by using the same amount of time.
Let's talk about some of the possible applications. You talked earlier about the idea of doing a news article using AI, something I understand. But you work for Uber. How are these problems manifested in a company like that? And how is AI used? What does it have to do? And what are the problems that occur?
That's a great question. So in this case, right, the user would be a data scientist that's writing a piece of code to create an algorithm. If you think about Uber, they operate in many, many cities around the world. Each city is divided into smaller regions. They call them hexagons. Each one of these small regions has some demand and has a certain amount of drivers. And you need to set a price for that demand and for those drivers. For each one of these regions, and for a city like LA, that would be in the order of 1,000 regions. And they need to set a price every 10 seconds. So now when you are writing a piece of code, you want to write an algorithm to estimate the demand. Once you estimate the demand, you can figure out the prices that are the right prices for that region in particular. And so you have to estimate this for 1,000 regions and come up with an algorithm to set prices. If you're using ChatGPT or GitHub Copilot, which is another version of an AI that coders use to speed up their coding or to be more productive, help me to come up with an algorithm to set prices. And ChatGPT is going to give you some answer. Okay? This is going to be really fast. It's going to take a matter of seconds. But that answer might be such that the code runs very, very slowly. And if the code runs very, very slowly, and you only have 10 seconds to show a price, and maybe sometimes it's even less, 5 seconds, because you have many, many other things running on top of just the pricing algorithm, then you're going to take too long to show the price to a potential rider. And if you take too long, that rider may leave the app and may go to a different app or might not even use the app at all. So you don't have a business. So something that is happening really, really behind the scenes can have an impact on your bottom line. These AI tools, GitHub Copilot or ChatGPT, are helping us to create first drafts. So it gives you a generic answer for the problem that you have at hand, for the task that you have at hand. And that's great. That gets you started. But when you are in a business settings, right, where any decision that you make or a piece of code that you write can have an impact on your bottom line, you better be very careful what you do with the answer that the AI is giving you, right? You have to think carefully. Is this actually understanding what are the constraints of my business? Is it understanding what are the capabilities of my organization? In the case of Uber, it could be how much computer power I have, right? How many clusters do I have? What's the latency of the algorithm that I'm allowed to have if I want to set prices? And these kind of things the AI might not be able to know. And so really you need someone with expertise, someone that knows, that has domain knowledge here to take that first draft and improve upon it. This is not to say the AI is useless. It can really enhance productivity and gives you a first version that you can start prototyping, but you really need the expertise on top of that if you want to get to the next level.
Back to Uber, is there a different coder, a human coder that's acting in real time every time somebody makes an application?
Great question. There is some sort of algorithm. And here at UCLA, we have the former chief economist of Uber, Keith Chen, who actually developed one of the very first versions of the search pricing algorithm. And this algorithm, what it does, it looks at these hexagons, right? These small regions within a bigger city. It looks at the weather conditions, the traffic conditions. Is there a raining or not football game or a soccer game or a basketball game close to this area? It looks at all these variables, right? It puts them in a black box and it outputs a price. So it's not that there are people making these changes in real time, you would go crazy, right? So you would need so many people, business wouldn't be profitable at all. So you have a coder generating a piece of software, an algorithm that does this work for you. And it better be a good piece of software that understands the business constraints, right? And for that, ChatGPT at this stage is not good enough. However, people are working towards given the reasoning capabilities. So right now, the AI is only a prediction machine, a really, really good one, but it doesn't really know how to reason. And that's some of the things that researchers in this field are looking at right now.
We talked about the death spiral and the issues of bias and homogenization. Do you think they can be overcome?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I would like to say that the bias, I think, is there right now, and it's hard to get rid of. It's going to be there because bias is so intrinsic to human nature, right? So we think about things from our own experience is bias, right? So we come from a certain family, from a certain country, from a certain political background, and that has an influence on us and it generates some bias. So that's sort of like hard to avoid, but there are some companies such as Anthropic AI that are trying to think about this and trying to come up with an approach to tackle this problem. And so this company, they have an approach that they call constitutional AI. What it does is to have a set of rules, which is like a constitution, and then they use that to train the AI. In a way, that's trying to minimize the interaction that humans have in the training process. So you have the AI training itself using a set of rules that we agree that are good rules. Some of these rules could be avoiding toxic, discriminatory outputs, avoiding people or avoiding helping a human engage in illegal or unethical activities. Once you get rid of the human component in the training, you may end up with something that is less biased. Okay, so that's one way to try to address the bias problem. In terms of the homogenization, I really think that these new forms of interacting with AI can go a long way, right? So this idea of multimodality, people are thinking about incorporating senses, smells, and things like that. I think these new ways of interacting with the AI, which are closer to how we interact as humans, can really help to avoid this problem of homogenization because they help people express their own preferences more precisely. I guess another factor that I think is really important is that we as a society, we need to start educating ourselves in terms of what's the right way of interacting with this technology. We need to understand what are their limitations. Now, I think more and more people know that, oh yeah, this is like really fun. People were like writing poems with the AI, writing jokes, writing Christmas songs and things like that. But now they realize, oh, this is cool. I might use it to write some emails, but then you write a lot of emails and then you realize, oh, this is just missing something. So people are understanding what are some of the limitations. Now that people understand that, that's great. But I don't know if everybody has this idea that, you know, like a generic answer might not be always the right thing to do. And so you have to take things a little bit farther, right? And this is a problem maybe for students that if they have to write an essay, they will write a very generic essay instead of pushing themselves, doing the research themselves, because there is something that they can take from the learning process that comes from doing all this research, right? So really, it's important that we transmit to society and to people that are using the AI that it's not the ultimate solution to our problems, right? There's still more work that needs to be done on top of it.
So we talk about artificial intelligence, and the implication is it's not human, but you're talking about the human problems with artificial intelligence, and I suspect they'll always be there.
These two problems I'm mentioning are going to be really, really hard to overcome, but I feel pretty good about this right now because AI researchers and these companies are, you know, they're very aware of these problems and they're taking different approaches to try to diminish their consequences, right? We talk about multimodality. There is another problem, which is security. You can try to use AI to build a bomb, but these companies know that. And so they have put these guardrails into place to try to avoid the generation of this harmful content. There is a whole field that was created, which is related to security in AI, that is trying to understand what different type of jailbreaks can happen. They write papers, and then these companies take these papers in, and they test their models. They test them. Something that's also interesting is that the Biden administration recently took this approach towards AI. What they want to do is to ask a company that trains these models to essentially let them know. So whenever the model is a big model, so if it's powerful enough, they have to tell the government, we trained this model. For example, ChatGPT-5, when that model is created, they will have to tell the government, hey, we created this very powerful model. And on top of that, they have to tell the government what type of testing they did when training the model. All of these things, I think, are trying to contribute to sort of like avoiding the potential problems that can arise with AI.
What agencies of the government are involved with this?
I don't think there is a specific agency. These are task forces that are being recently created because all of this is so new. So they're just trying to understand what are the best steps to take in the short term. But I'm sure that in the long run, there's going to be something more formal, maybe a specific agency within the government that oversees the development of this technology.
Obviously, this technology is developing so fast, it's hard to get your mind around the kinds of changes that are taking place.
Yeah, exactly. I'm impressed almost every week, but also it's a very exciting time. I myself use the technology a lot for my research. I can really, really see the benefit when you use this technology carefully.
But when you talk about societal consequences, is it also potentially a dangerous time as well?
So there is a big discussion about AI taking control over the things that we do, and people are a little bit scared that, some people may lose jobs and things like that. And I think those are valid concerns. So you have a trade-off here, right? So do we slow down this process that can have huge productivity gains? And by stopping this process, maybe, we are more careful and we end up in a safer place down the road. But do we want to lose those productivity gains, right? So that's a question that we have to ask ourselves as a society. And another point I think is interesting is that people had this concern when ChatGPT just came out. And after a year, it feels like we are in a safe place. More companies are coming out, it's helping people be more productive. We haven't seen a significant negative impact from this technology this far. So that makes me hopeful that the potential negative consequences are not that big, at least in the short to medium term.
Your paper warns about things becoming bland and generic rather than being specific and pointed and exciting. Is that a real danger?
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. There is a Wall Street Journal article talking about this, that there is a lot of content in the internet already that looks very generic, and that's content that was generated with AI. I think the reporter in the article, it's getting a lot of requests to publish articles. And when the reporter reads his articles, he knows that those were generated with AI. There is no way that a person wrote that piece of work. A good writer can tell when someone else is a good writer or not, right? So this is something that is already happening. And that's why I think it's important that as a society, we understand how to interact with the AIs. We understand what are the risks. If I want to be very fast, the cost I'm going to pay is that I'm going to come up with something very generic when I'm using AI to help me do my work. But at the same time, these companies realize, oh, this is a problem. So let's try to help people to express their preferences better. And that's where like multimodality is coming into play. And in the context of coding, they are developing new features that you can use to better express your preferences as a coder. Okay, so companies are aware of this and they're trying to tackle this problem.
Professor Francisco Castro, thank you so much for helping us better understand the problems and the potential of this extraordinary technology. It's just great to hear from you, and come back, talk to us again.
Thank you for having me. This was fun.
Okay, I'm Armin Alney. Thanks for joining us. This has been How the World Works from the UCLA Anderson School of Management. Join us again.